Chapter 22. The Strength of Rage. He came over the rock to a 6-foot drop and didn't hesitate, leaping onto the back of the creature below, a large and vicious hellhound. The canine beast howled as its back bent low under the weight, a force that would have broken the spine of a large dog or a wolf. It did little damage to a beast as powerful as a hellhound. It spun its head immediately, lightning fast, to expel its unwelcome rider. But Zachnephane's sword was already moving, and he had no intention of trying to make a mount of the demonic canine. Now the hellhound yelped more loudly as the fine drow blade gashed into the side of its neck. The hound whipped its head to the other side, but again Zachnephane stayed ahead of the game, flipping his sword back up and over, catching it in both hands, and plunging it down with all his strength into the back of the beast's neck, driving down cracking bone. The front paws splayed wide as the hellhound went down to the stone. Up leaped Zachnephane already, spinning and drawing his whip, and in the same fluid motion snapped it into the face of the next nearest hound as it began to spring his way. He scored a brutal hit, taking an eye from the beast, which stumbled aside and blew its fiery breath at the weapon master, though it was too far away then for the flames to hurt its target. A second crack of the whip drove it back farther, right into a barrage of expertly thrown daggers, jarring the hound, stabbing the hound. Zachnephane brought his whip back in, winding it with easy expertise to replace it on his belt. He grasped the sword, standing straight up from the dead hellhound, and tore it free as he walked toward the second beast, which was squirming and spinning in pain. He finished it with a perfect stab through the empty socket that used to contain its left eye. 2 less, Jarlaxle said hopefully, coming around a nearby rock. He was adjusting his sleeve, moving it back down to cover a most interesting bracer he wore. "Wherever did you find so many daggers?" Zachnephane asked, shaking his head to show that he was hardly surprised. "So many," Jarlaxle replied with a grin. "My friend, just a few, just a few." "Enough for 1,000 more of these devil dogs?" Jarlaxle shrugged. 2 less," he said again. "Until one of the demons within the keep decides to bring 2 more in," Zachnephane replied. "We are up against an infinite army here, my friend." "Not so. Their gating powers are limited, except that they can gate in creatures who can gate in creatures. Lesser demons cannot do that, and greater demons are, fortunately, rare. And we're not going to fight them all now in any case." "Then why did we come back?" "Because I am almost certain that my associates are in there. I'll not leave them." "These are demons, Jarlaxle," Zachnephane looked down at the dead hounds. "They don't make a habit of taking prisoners." "There are more than demons at play here," Jarlaxle replied, and started back toward the coast with Zachnephane in tow. "Lord Neverember is connected to this, and he is no demon. An evil fool, perhaps, but most certainly human. A noble house of Waterdeep is part of this, too, and I doubt that all the dwarves of this clan's stone shaft have been possessed by the creatures within Chari Hunsrin's vile phylacteries. Those that weren't are likely dead, too." Jarlaxle paused and cocked his head to cast a sidelong glance back at his companion. "I'd forgotten these fits of Zachnephane the Dour," he said, and started to laugh. But he stopped himself at his own reminder. In all the years since Zachnephane's death, had Jarlaxle remembered only the easy parts of the weapon master's personality? The fine blades and loyalty, the quick wit as sharp as those blades, the unrivaled courage? It was easy to think kindly of one who was gone. But small memories started bubbling up, little moments when perhaps Zachnephane hadn't been the easiest companion to get along with. And once again he was reminded of Artemis and Treri, and realized that was what made both men such important allies. They were complex beings who excelled at many things, but ultimately thought on their own. Reassured by having Zachnephane at his side, he pressed on. "Have your mount ready in case we need a fast escape," Jarlaxle instructed, though he was certain that the ever-vigilant Zachnephane wouldn't need to be reminded. As expected, Zachnephane didn't even respond, but Jarlaxle smiled a little when he saw some subtle movement near his friend's pouches. They came back in sight of Thornhold Keep soon after, looking down from a different angle now, from a rocky bluff south of the dwarven stronghold that put them up high enough to see the top parapets of the place, even the dwarves walking the walls, torches in hand. Learn their patterns, Jarlaxle instructed. They are on their guard now, Zacnafane replied, pointing to a dwarf walking south on the front wall, turning the corner at precisely the same time as the dwarf walking west along the south wall turned right around the corner to the north. Not sloppy. They'll grow bored soon enough. Guards always do. We've another 4 hours before daylight. Zacnafane sighed. You would have me leave my associates in there? Jarlaxle asked. Would you have me leave if you were in there? Zacnafane cocked an eyebrow. If there was even a chance that you were alive? Jarlaxle clarified, and Zacnafane chuckled. Or is this simply your way of telling me that you warned me if we are again chased away? Or it is a warning of my curses if we can't get away? I would be disappointed were it not so. Zacnafane sighed again, but he didn't leave, and that's what Jarlaxle cared about right now. So they crouched and they watched and they waited, and an hour passed, and then another. The eastern sky began to lighten ever so slightly, but to drow eyes it burned like a warning beacon. Still the dwarves on the wall marched with great precision, keeping watch at all points. Had these been mere dwarves, and not, at least some, demons, Jarlaxle might have long ago made the attempt to get over the wall, but he was beginning to believe that they might have to wait until the next night for this clan to let down their guard enough for him and his partner to slip through. He was counting the steps of the dwarf marching the southern expanse when Zacnafane nudged him, then directed his attention to the northeast. At first he saw nothing, but then he noted the approaching form, one he knew would soon enough be shining white under the morning sun. Your son, he murmured to Zacnafane. Despite their secrecy, Zacnafane stood up, and that action, that simple movement that could have given their position away, revealed to Jarlaxle just how much this formidable weapon master, this supreme, often cold-blooded warrior, cared for Drizzt. With their superb dark vision, the drow pair could now make out the rider on the thundering unicorn. Jarlaxle's eyes widened, and Zacnafane gasped when Drizzt leaned low to the right-hand side of his mount, then, shockingly, dropped free, tumbling to the stone. He landed in a roll and kept rolling so beautifully until it brought him back to his feet, running full out behind the unicorn. Every great stride of that magical steed took it farther and farther from Drizzt, but more importantly, every stride made the unicorn seem weirdly smaller, shrinking until in no time at all there was nothing left of the magical mount. Nothing except for Drizzt, who continued his rush to the wall, darting about from stone to stone. They watched him reach the eastern wall about 20 paces to the right of the main door, and both blinked as if unable to comprehend the sight as the skilled ranger, now trained in the way of the Monastery of the Yellow Rose, went up that wall at full speed, hands and legs moving like the legs of a scrabbling spider. He gained the parapet in short order and rolled right over, then disappeared from sight as if he had just jumped down the back side of the 30-foot wall into the courtyard, which both could easily believe the case. From somewhere beyond, a dwarf howled in protest. Other guards took up the call, and all along the wall, the torches began to bob as the sentries ran to find the intruder. Jarlaxle started to yell to Zacnafane that they should be quick to the wall, but before the first word had left his mouth, Zacnafane ran past him already on his way.
"What now? Them dark elves return?" Bronkenstoneshaft asked the pair of agitated sentries when he saw them scrambling down from the walls into the keep courtyard.
The clan leader was not in a good mood. Half his boys were possessed by demons, after all, and he was having a hard time trusting them. And while that should have bothered him more than it did, he had made a deal with some monsters, after all, it was bringing him great wealth and potentially unimaginable power. So he was willing to live with it.
"Might be," answered one, a young woman named Argamant, who was wearing a Glabrezu pendant around her neck.
"Gwerkin seen a shadow come over the wall," added Franken, Bronkin's favorite nephew, and one, by his demand, untouched by the possession necklaces.
"Gwerkin's a lass with a lot of imagination," Argamant noted.
"Aye, and we just seen two drow outside," Bronkin reminded her.
"Fire and hot, the girl's imaginin'," said Argamant with a cruel laugh. But Bronkin wasn't convinced and let her know it with a forceful shake of his yellow-haired head.
Bronken was about to argue, but a yell from inside the keep, followed by a roar like that of a hunting cat, filled the walls. That was soon followed by a demonic shriek, and any thoughts of further conversation were stolen from them. The three dwarves became two, as Argamant transformed into a hulking Glabrezu. The other two were already in the keep when Argamant settled into her new form, but with her great strides she caught up to them in the first room past the foyer. All three watched in surprise as a feline, a huge black panther, sped past in the hallway beyond that foyer. Argamant leaped out of the room into the corridor and crashed into another demon, a huge fiend with a boar-like face and murderous tusks, a fat body, half-giant and half-warthog, with ridiculously small black-feathered wings flapping behind. As large as the Glabrezu was, 12 feet tall, this demon, an Alfeshni, was more than half again taller. Still, even with the two entangled and thrashing, Bronken and Franken managed to rush out to take up the pursuit. Through the maze of corridors and rooms they ran, always one step behind the elusive cat. Other dwarves joined in, other demons joined in, and that whole side of the keep shook under the thunderous pursuit, with doors being torn from their hinges and hurled aside, sometimes into the face of a fellow pursuer. Lesser demons, the desiccated humanoid manes, ran into major demons to be torn apart for getting in the way or simply because the vicious beast needed to destroy something, anything. And all the while the panther moved just out of reach until it seemed the dwarves had at last cornered it. However, without stopping, through a window went the fleeing cat, and the pursuit rolled out into the courtyard, and shouts came down from all the walls. And back in the corridor outside the small room, Argamant the Glabrezu and the giant Nalfeshni continued their battle, caring not at all for the events beyond their mortal clash.
"We are found."
Zaknafane's fingers waggled up to Jarlaxle, the two of them halfway up the keep's outer wall, wedged into a corner, and pressing in more tightly because of all the commotion just on the other side of the stone barrier.
"Drizzt,"
Jarlaxle corrected.
"Then move," Zaknafane demanded. "Trust in him. They are chasing, not fighting,"
Jarlaxle answered. He did begin to move, but slowly and carefully. Weightless from his levitation spell, the mercenary leader inched his way up the wall, pausing every few feet to listen carefully to the continuing commotion within.
"Damned big cat," he heard at one point, a dwarven voice, and he nodded and smiled.
From the shadows down the wide corridor beyond the foyer, Drizzt watched the demonic battle, Glabrezu against Nalfeshni, a pair of major fiends locked in vicious combat. The larger Nalfeshni carried lines of scars from the other monster's great pincers, but the resilient greater fiend was far from finished. Indeed, even then the pig-faced behemoth waggled its arms, accepting yet another clawing strike from the Glabrezu in order to cast a magical spell that filled the air with waves of unholy magic, slamming the Glabrezu and stunning it. The Nalfeshni lowered its massive shoulders and charged right into its opponent, bowling the Glabrezu to the ground. Then it bent low and jumped, flapping its two small wings furiously to bring its back all the way up to the 30-foot ceiling, where it stopped the flapping and dropped from above, smashing against the prone demon. Up it went again to fall into another crushing blow, then a third time. The Glabrezu writhed and tried to stand, and when its crushed hips failed, it tried to roll out of the way instead, lifting its pincer arms to fend off the next attack. But the Nalfeshni had obviously battled such fiends as this before, and coughed an evil laugh as it plummeted once again, accepting the sting of the pincers in exchange for the meteoric blow it landed on the chest of the Glabrezu. Even for a seasoned veteran like Drizzt, the sheer brutality of the giant demon proved jarring. He didn't look away, though, for he wanted to better understand the unbridled power of this monstrous beast, one he might soon be battling himself. The Glabrezu lay still after the next crash, and after inspecting the damage for a moment, the Nalfeshni just leaped up and began stomping on the helpless fiend's head again and again. Black smoke began to rise from the prone demon, telling Drizzt that it was destroyed, and its essence already flying back to its lower, planar home. But no. Where the demon had been, now lay a dwarf woman groaning. The Nalfeshni laughed again and kicked her aside, into the wall, then stormed away toward where the others had gone. Drizzt watched the black smoke swirling all about the area, but not immediately dissipating. Instead, it wound, tightened, and dove into the throat of the dwarf.
but no, not the throat, rather into a necklace set with large gems, a phylactery.
Much more became clear to Driz then. He nodded as he thought of the Bloodstone Lands, the caves in Damara, and the succubus named Malkinthet. He went to the fallen dwarf. She was alive and didn't seem too badly injured, more stunned than anything. She flinched at the drow before her, looming as if he was going to finish the job. Instead, he took her necklace and rushed back the other way. Drizzt had been in this place before, twice, once to shelter from the rain, and the other time simply to scout the abandoned keep. He didn't remember the layout well, but enough to know where lay the dungeons, and so, he presumed, where he would find Athrogate and Amber, if they had survived, or likely, even if they had not. He found the trap door to the lower level, a ladder lying beside it. First, he quietly dismissed Guinevere, sending her home to the astral plane, knowing he might soon enough be recalling her and needing to be conscious of how much time she spent here. Then, slowly and carefully, he lifted the edge of the door just a bit to peek below. He saw no one in the room immediately beneath, but he heard dwarf voices not far away. Eschewing the ladder, he opened the trapdoor enough to slip through, caught a handhold to suspend him above the floor below, and, after a cursory glance at the nearby wall to ensure that he could get back up and open the trapdoor, he eased the wooden seal down once more. Some 10 feet off the ground, Drizzt swung toward the nearby wall and simply let go, safely and silently dropping to the floor. He got his bearings. Two natural limestone corridors ran off this chamber, left and right, with the voices coming from the right, the west. He chose that path, figuring it would be easier to find any prisoners once he had caught the jailers. He crept along the natural corridors, using the shadows of their uneven walls to his advantage. Soon the light of a fire spilled into the hallway, and the voices grew louder, coming from a small chamber just ahead. To the floor went Drizzt, crawling silently the rest of the way. Three dwarves sat around a cooking fire. The good news was that only one wore the baubles Drizzt expected of a demonic phylactery. Drizzt hardly looked at that one, however, his eyes and his heart caught by the other two. For one wore a garment that he knew well, Athrogate's girdle, which granted him the strength of a mountain giant. The third of the group carried a mace, and not just any mace, a two-handed monster weapon with the name Skullcrusher. The mace of Amber Gristle O'Moll of the Adbar O'Molls. Drizzt swallowed hard. Did the fact that the jailers carried these items mean that his friends were alive and imprisoned here? Or did it mean the worst? As his eyes adjusted to the harsh light of the fire, he noted that the passage continued directly across the small chamber, climbed just a bit, and seemed to widen and turn all about. Drizzt thought that he recognized that area, and if he remembered correctly, there were indeed cells in there, even if that just meant natural cubbies with shackles coming from the walls. He took a better look at the jailers, noting a huge stone immediately beside the one wearing Athrogate's girdle. That didn't bode well, nor could Drizzt have any idea of what type of demon he might find himself facing from the one with the phylactery. And that particular dwarf had a huge two-headed war axe leaning against the wall behind her, one too large for her to wield properly in her natural form, surely. Yet none of it mattered, not really. With even the chance that his friends might be beyond and needing his help, his safety was the last thing on his mind. But he did need to consider a different tactic than headlong attack. He backed down the corridor, looking for a place where he might conceal himself. Climbing up onto a natural shelf along one wall, he called out, "Elves! Dern dark elves! Ready your arms! Stop him at the trap door!" in the best dwarven accent, tone, and dialect he could muster. It didn't sound very convincing to him, and he winced more than once at his poor Brunner impersonation. Nevertheless, he did hear a commotion from back down the corridor. "Went left! The wrong way!" he called. "Trap him! Trap him! Get a demon!" He ducked in tight against the stone, and sure enough, two of the jailers came rushing up, the one with Amber's mace and the demon. And as that monstrosity passed below, Drizzt was glad of his choice to use deception instead of weapons. He wasn't well versed in whatever in the nine hells this thing was, but it certainly looked formidable. A hugely muscled, green-skinned monster with goblin-like ears, great bat wings and goat horns, wielding the massive axe with practiced ease. It ran hunched over but still passed only just below Drizzt's position, its horns close enough for him to grab.
"Went left, they yelled,"
the dwarf said when they passed Drizzt and neared the trap door. The demon never slowed, rushing down the other tunnel, eager for a kill.
"Yeah, yourself goes," said the dwarf, shaking his head. "Meself'll just be waiting here, eh?"
Drizzt tapped him on the shoulder, and he spun about. Eyes bulging when he saw the drow, the dwarf swept Skullcrusher across to swat the unexpected visitor aside. But Drizzt fell flat to his belly, the mace sweeping overhead, then popped back up before the dwarf could reverse the stroke. He caught the dwarf's extended arm by the wrist and drove his other hand brutally hard against the elbow, pulling the wrist toward him as he struck. He heard the crack of bone, and the dwarf groaned. Drizzt lifted the arm and spun beneath it, coming around to drive his elbow right into the dwarf's face. Continuing his spin, he lifted his knee hard at just the right moment to drive it up between the dwarf's legs, lifting the fellow from the ground. The dwarf landed and lurched, weapon dropped, one hand going to his crotch, the other rising in defense. But too late, as Drizzt had already pulled one of his scimitars and executed the fourth move of the routine, a downward right-hand cross, Palma leading, that caught the bending dwarf on the side of the jaw and sent him flying to the floor. A quick look assured Drizzt that this one wouldn't be back in the fight any time soon, so he grabbed up Amber's mace and rushed back the other way. He slowed as he neared the room with the fire, peeking in from far enough to see the dwarf with Aphrodite's girdle standing ready, huge rock in hand. Drizzt crept up beside the door.
"Here now, Stinky," the jailer said. "That yourself, what?"
Drizzt summoned a globe of magical darkness just outside the door, so that its visually impenetrable veil bled into the room, nearly to the dwarf. Drizzt didn't hesitate, slipping in on his belly, moving to the side of the chamber.
"What hey?" the dwarf said, and Drizzt peeked out of the globe, down low into the side, and saw the diminutive fellow hoist the boulder high overhead.
He was still staring ahead nervously into the darkness globe when a drow hand slipped around his waist and deftly and quickly unlatched the girdle.
"What?"
the dwarf managed to say as his belt was yanked away, but only that before the boulder he held above his head collapsed his arms and cracked him in the head, bearing him to the ground beneath it. Once again, though, Drizzt was already gone, out the other side of the chamber, moving fast through the myriad of alcoves and chambers beyond. He soon enough heard the sound of someone softly crying, and following that, came in sight of a bedraggled, beaten prisoner, a dwarf he knew well. In the corridors he had left behind, though, Drizzt heard stirring. The return of the demon, probably, and by the sound of it, some of its friends. He rushed to his own friend, who was sitting against the wall, arms shackled up high over his head. Drizzt started for the shackles, but stopped in horror when he glanced to the side. There lay the severed head of another old companion, a dwarf who had accompanied him on his adventures for years. "Oh, Aphrodite," he whispered, his voice full of sympathy. This dwarf had finally found peace, had finally found love, and now... "Eh?" Aphrodite replied, barely opening his eyes, if he even could with all the caked blood. Knowing that time was running out, Drizzt knelt at the dwarf's side and put a water skin to Aphrodite's mouth, then splashed water all over the dwarf's face, trying to wipe away the blood. Aphrodite coughed and shook his head, looking at Drizzt confusedly. With one hand, Drizzt gave him more water. With the other, he looped Aphrodite's belt about the dwarf's waist.
"Listen, friend, we've not much time," he explained, pulling the girdle tight and buckling it. Immediately, Aphrodite began to growl and moved as if to pull the chains. "Hold," Drizzt bade him. "Not yet, my friend. They are coming. The ones who killed Amber are coming. Wait for them until they are vulnerable."
Aphrodite continued to stare at him blankly, but Drizzt was out of time, he knew, and so had to trust that the dwarf understood. He put a finger over his lips to call for silence, adjusted Aphrodite's ragged shirt to mostly cover the girdle, then slunk off into the shadows. From a perch not far away, Drizzt watched the approach of the captors. He recognized the dwarf in front, the one who had become the demon, but was once again without its monstrous form. Behind her came a trio of other dwarves, two holding the poor fellow who had dropped a boulder on his own head, who was still lolling about in a daze. Behind them came a trio of hulking, vulture-like demons Drizzt knew to be Vrocks, formidable and vicious, with great clawed hands that could rake the skin off an umber hulk and powerful beaks that could split stone.
"You got a friend, do ye?"
the lead dwarf asked Athrogate, walking right up and kicking the poor captive on the bottoms of his bare, whip-torn feet. Athrogate opened one eye, enough to glare at his torturer.
"Got lots," he managed to say, laboring with every word.
"Aye, he got one who's come in," said the stone shaft dwarf. "Might that I'll be putting his head on your lady friend's body, and hers on his. Now ye tell me where your friend might be, and I'll kill him quick, eh?"
Athrogate half coughed, half snorted. But from the side, Driz nodded, noting the dwarf's fingers wrapping around the shackle chains.
"Hey, but his face has been wiped," another of the dwarves then noted.
"Ha!" Up leaped Athrogate, arms wide, hands gripping those chains, knuckles whitening.
"Oh, but you're to po—"
the lead dwarf said, or started to say, until Athrogate gave a gigantic tug on the chains, his belt supplying the necessary power. They were tightly bolted, but the stones of the wall proved less secure, the whole of it buckling behind him. Instinctively and defensively, not even realizing the scope of what he had done, Athrogate brought his right arm swinging across as the dwarf standing before him started to draw a sword. A huge block of stone, fastened to the end of the shackle chain like the head of a mountain giant's flail, whacked the dwarf in the side and launched him flying into the wall. Now full of bloodlust, beyond pain, beyond hunger, beyond anything but hatred and the sight of his beloved Amber's head lying in the filth, Athrogate kept that arm up above his head, swinging the impromptu flail. He found a similar bludgeoning block attached to the left shackle, and wasted no time in putting that one into a complementary spin. For 100 years, Athrogate had wielded Cracker and Whacker. These impromptu flails were much larger and heavier, but the game was the same, and the dwarf went forward behind a maniacal laugh, swatting aside the two healthy dwarves next in line and running over the third as he fell to the ground, slowing only enough to stomp his bare foot on the fool's face. In among the three demons he waited fearlessly, swinging wildly and scoring stunning hits. But these were 500-pound monsters, and for every hit Athrogate gave, he took two, claws raking, digging the skin from his bones, sometimes so deeply as to scratch the bones as well. Athrogate didn't seem to feel any of it. One vrock drove its beak at him from above his swing. The furious dwarf caught it in his other hand, clamping it tight, yanking it back and forth with such power that the demon had to open wide its vulture wings to maintain any semblance of balance. No matter, though, for Athrogate's other hand came up and clamped about its bird neck. He tugged it in close and drove its head up the other way and bit out the creature's throat. He flung the dying thing before him, driving the others away enough for him to get his flails spinning once more. He heard the dwarves stirring behind him, soon to surround him, but he didn't care. All he wanted was to inflict pain, to crush those who had done this to Amber.
The two dwarves stumbled together, directly behind the rampaging Athrogate. They took up their weapons, unsteady and unsure. Both grabbed their hamstrings at the same time, as a fine scimitar cut through each. Then there was suddenly another person between them, a drow elf, and even as they realized it, Driz snapped his hands out wide to either side with a stunning quickness, the pommels of his blades crashing into dwarven faces. Off to the side of Athrogate went Driz, drawing one vrock with him. The furious creature clawed left, long arm sweeping down, but Driz hopped over the strike. Across came the right claw for the drow's shoulder, but a mighty weapon, a blade of two magics, that of Twinkle and that of Vidranath, was up to block, and at just the right angle, so that the vrock's own swing brought its arm hard against the fine edge. Drizzt's other blade, his oldest weapon, stabbed hard into the monster's chest. The wound would not have proven mortal, surely, to this otherworldly being, and Driz thought it likely that such knowledge was why the stupid vrock had allowed the strike, thinking to counter by pecking Driz in the head. However, Icing Death was no normal blade, but a frostbrand, a weapon imbued with a magical hatred of fire, and of creatures birthed in fire, like demons. The vrock's head came forward anyway, as Icing Death began to extinguish its life force. But that strike, too, was cleanly intercepted by the flat of Vidranath, the weapon turning the beak aside just enough so that it skimmed past Drizzt's face. That near miss didn't shake Drizzt. He could have further deflected the beak if necessary. But he wanted his weapon in close and too quick for the vrock to get its clawing hands back up. A subtle, sudden shift sent Vidranath slicing across the creature's neck.
and Drizzt twisted Icing Death, eating the creature's fiery heart. The cavern shook then, violently, and a lump of blood and guts and feathers washed over Drizzt and his opponent. He turned as he skipped aside and saw Aphrogate extracting one of his stone-block flails from the flattened form of Avrok. Growling, Aphrogate started for the dwarves Drizzt had dropped, for they weren't yet dead. "No time," Drizzt yelled, and he grabbed the dwarf by the arm. He knew that it wouldn't have taken Aphrogate more than a heartbeat for each kill, but he didn't want these dwarves dead. There were sinister forces at play here, he knew, and perhaps the taint on these fellows made them victims more than perpetrators. As it was, they had pretty grievous injuries, but they were no longer a threat, so if Drizzt could keep a little blood off his friend's hands, he had to try. Aphrogate seemed to hear his urgency, at least, and grabbing the rusty chains in bloody hands, he roared yet again, then ran out of the chamber and down the hall toward the distant fire. With Drizzt right behind him, the dwarf crashed right through the fire, kicking the logs aside, growling and snarling and roaring with every step. So wound into his rage that Drizzt was shocked he had managed to turn the fellow from the living dwarves. Down to the trapdoor they went, and the poor dwarf Drizzt had initially dropped was just rising shakily back to his feet. He stumbled away down the far side of the corridor at their approach, but this time Drizzt couldn't stop his companion fast enough. On the stone shaft fellow in a few leaping strides, Aphrogate grabbed him in both hands and flung him into the wall, where he crumpled again to the floor. Aphrogate lifted his foot to stomp the life out of the fellow, and Drizzt leaped at his friend, trying to body block him aside. He might as well have tried to move a mountain. Down came Aphrogate's boot, and the poor stone shaft fellow jerked and bounced under the violent impact. Aphrogate lifted his foot again, but this time Drizzt took a different approach and kicked Aphrogate's straightened leg in the back of the knee. The leg buckled, Aphrogate stumbled, and Drizzt leaped upon him, bearing him down. But Aphrogate clamped his hands on the sides of Drizzt's head and pressed, and with such awful strength that Drizzt feared that his skull would implode.
We have to get out of here, the drow stammered.
Aphrogate roared and flung Drizzt backward, then hopped to his feet.
"I'll be killing them all, and don't ye stop me!"
the dwarf hollered, and moved to stomp the fallen stone-shaft dwarf.
"With this, then," Drizzt yelled, and pulled Skullcrusher off his back.
Aphrogate's eyes widened, and his knees went visibly weak. Drizzt ran back the other way, back to the trapdoor, figuring he had to get Aphrogate out of sight of the fallen fellow. To his relief, Aphrogate came around the bend in pursuit almost immediately.
"That door," Drizzt said, pointing up. "Many beyond it, including those responsible for you being down here."
He dropped the two-handed mace to the floor and went to Aphrogate. Pulling a lockpick, another gift from his time at the Monastery of the Yellow Rose, from the cuff of his sleeve, he got to work on the rudimentary lock of the dwarf's shackle. The chain fell free, and Drizzt moved for the other one, but Aphrogate jerked that arm away.
"Oh, no ye don't," he said, taking up Amber's large mace in just his right hand and moving it about as if it weighed no more than a feather. "Ye get me through that door, elf," Aphrogate said, as much a warning as a request,
and in such a tone that Drizzt believed that if he didn't comply, the dwarf would heave him up into the air to splinter that door. Scrambling deftly, Drizzt went up on the wall to the ledge just below the portal. Hearing noise beyond, he cautiously pressed up on the trapdoor, cracking it open, then closing it immediately. He turned down to Aphrogate, who was hopping about anxiously, and put a finger to his pursed lips, then mouthed, "Many." Aphrogate poked his finger emphatically at the door, then took up Amber's mace in the same hand as the improvised flail, and hopped up, grabbing for the ledge Drizzt knelt upon, but falling just short. He jumped again, this time swinging the heavy wall block up over the ledge. Unable to prevent this action, Drizzt caught the dwarf's free hand to help him up, but then signaled for him to stay quiet. No such luck. No sooner had Aphrogate gotten his feet under him on the ledge than he sprang once more for the door, bursting through it and grabbing the floor above, then tugging himself up to his waist. Drizzt heard the reaction above and went to shove the dwarf, for there was no turning back then. But even as he grabbed Aphrogate's feet, he was yanked off his balance and had to drop all the way back down to the floor. He managed to glance up just in time to see Aphrogate caught in a great pincer and being hauled through. A moment of indecision struck the drow.
Athrogate was surely doomed. So was he to scramble up there and dive into the melee, and probable death as well? A momentary thought told him to flee down the tunnels, hide, and sneak out later. But no, that he could not do. So he went quickly to the ledge again, wincing at every roar and growl, whimper and crash above. He started through the open trapdoor, but fell low as something rushed over his head. Again it flew past, and Driz struggled to make sense of it. On the third pass, he realized he was looking at the thick legs of a Glabrezu demon being whirled around like a living Uthgard throwing hammer. The fourth rotation was different, though, with the whole demon passing overhead, flying back past the open trapdoor to crash into the wall behind. With nothing spinning overhead anymore, Driz leaped through to the floor above. The demon was no threat, he realized immediately, for black smoke was already forming around the dead thing, and back the other way, dwarves and demons flew, as Athrogate plowed through them, Skullcrusher and his flail, blasting a trail like scythe through tall dead grass. Little elation accompanied that sight for Drizzt, however, for Athrogate poured blood out of both sides from the deep gashes of the demon pincer. From farther down the hall, crossbows clicked, and Athrogate jerked, but then yelled and charged on. "No, no, no," Drizzt said, drawing Tolmeril the Heartseeker from his magical belt buckle and setting an arrow to the longbow in the same movement. Unfortunately, the archers in the corridor beyond Athrogate fled before Drizzt could get a clear shot, slamming a heavy door. Drizzt heard them drop a bar down behind the door, too, and for a moment he feared that the one exit route had been sealed. But Athrogate shouldered through it anyway, splintering the wood and launching the bent metal bar into the room beyond. Drizzt rushed to keep up with the rampaging dwarf. All through the keep they scrambled, and never once did Drizzt get shot, probably because all the bolts were slamming into Athrogate. As they neared the outer doors, Driz skidded to a stop abruptly, seeing one fallen dwarf and recognizing her as the victim of the brutal Nalfeshni. She had played dead as Athrogate rushed past, and now was trying to lift herself to her hands and knees. Driz replaced his bow in the belt buckle and ran to her. He caught her under one arm and hoisted her upright. "One sound, one bad move, and I'll kill you," he warned, drawing Icing Death. "I have freed you of the cursed necklace," he said to her. "When you are well, come to the east, to Bleeding Vines, and perhaps we will find a way to save your kin." She just stared at him, as if in a daze, and he eased her back to the floor. On Drizzt went, trying to catch back up to Athrogate, coming in sight of him just as he burst through the outer door and into the open courtyard, where a host of enemies waited.